There we go. Okay, we're back. And so when you play it back on the computer, you can actually hear it. It's pretty reasonable. So the microphone must be decent, but the speaker is horrible. All right. I was saying something about compilers. They're twisted, but useful. All right. So here's the game plan. We'll develop two different schemes that compute the value of an expression. One, oh, you know what? I'm not going to do this in this level of depth. But the way the slides describe it, I actually developed two mutually recursive algorithms. Each refers to the other one, that can take any expression, as long as it's not 2 to 2 complex, requiring more than something like 16 temporary variables, and it'll turn it into MLQ machine language so that it can run. I won't go through it in horrible detail, but I would like to step you through it a little bit, because this is the way that computers do their stuff. They take these programs and then they do their best to convert them into something else. So if we've got an expression tree that looks like just A by itself, that gets turned into look at the one on the left. It gets turned into something that just says, take whatever's in A and stick it in the accumulator. So that's really straightforward. Any variable can just get copied into the accumulator because our machine language has all those statements in it. Now, what about nots? This is where it gets a little bit more interesting. So if you have an expression tree that's not, and underneath of it is some other expression tree, what you can do is first develop a machine language program that figures out the value of this expression tree, sticks the value into some temporary variable called P, I think? No, N? Yeah, N. Then it adds one more statement to the end of it, which says, negate N and put the answer in the accumulator. Right? So no matter how big and complicated that expression is, we've just said, okay, you just convert the expression, leave the answer in N, I'll do the rest. So it comes back and it just sticks one more thing at the end. It just says, take whatever it was in N, negate it, and put that in the accumulator. And that finishes the job. Well, okay, well, how did it do all the rest of the expression? Well, that's okay. It's in the recursion, and it just gets handled. All right, but it's not quite that yet. We also have to explain how to do ands and ors, which are not that much more complicated, but a little more complicated. So let's look on the left to see how this is done. So if you've got a tree that looks like or at the top, some expression tree number one on one side, actually on one side, and some expression tree two on the other side, here's what we do. First thing is you just say, okay, can somebody please generate me a program that does expression tree 1, leaving the answer in some variable n. All right, now that you've done that, will someone else please generate for me the code for whatever it takes to do expression tree 2, leaving the answer in the accumulator. And now all we have to do is stick one more statement at the end, which just says, take the accumulator, or it with n, and stick the answer back in the accumulator. So this can handle any expression as long as we have n as a temporary variable. We have to have n. Nobody should be working with n, because otherwise we're going to overwrite it, and we're going to generate bad, buggy code. All right, and is handled the same way. So really, it can be very, very simple. Any expression tree, just break it into its pieces, convert each of the pieces, combine them together, and it works. So here's a concrete example. Here's our not A or B, the same thing that we were looking at in the clicker questions. So how does this get converted, now automatically, using the routines that I just described, into machine language? So the first thing that has to happen is it has to generate code for not A. It doesn't know how to do that. That's the left subtree. It has to generate that code, leaving the answer in N. Somehow that has to happen. Once that happens, it also has to generate code for the expression B, leaving the answer in the accumulator. And when that's all done, it's going to stick one more statement at the end that just ORs the accumulator and N with each other. So now we need to say, okay, well, how do those things in italics happen? Well, to generate the code for not A, leaving the answer in N, we have two steps. The first thing, we have to generate code for A, leaving the answer in the accumulator. That's just going to be take A and stick it in the accumulator. Then we have to take the accumulator, negate it, and stick that in N. So all that was generated automatically just by carrying out the same steps that I was just describing. And then the last statement is really easy. How do you generate code for B, leaving the answer in the accumulator? That's just accumulator equals B. I had that 3 slides ago. That's the rule gets applied there. And now, when all is said and done, ignoring the italics, we're left with take A, stick it in the accumulator, negate the accumulator, stick it in N, put B in the accumulator, take the accumulator or N and stick that back in the accumulator. this was exactly one of the examples that I had in the clicker questions that evaluates this tree. But what's cool about this example is it was generated completely automatically. Now, notice that it's not just short. So we'll get to that in a second. So let me just mention assembly briefly. So notice that if you remember the MLQ computer from last time, it basically had a bunch of binary numbers, actually decimal numbers that got converted to binary, each of which corresponded to one of the statements. They're all 7-bit numbers. So if we're actually wanting to run this program on my computer, we have to go one last step and convert all those statements into numbers. Numbers that correspond to exactly those machine language statements. And so the last step is assembly. I wrote a little assembler for this, but it just ends up converting accumulator equals A is the same as 32. It's the command number 32 in the list. N equals not accumulator is 125. Accumulator equals B is 33. Accumulator equals accumulator or N is 13. So those numbers can then be actually run directly on the computer. And that's the job of the assembler, to do that last step of converting machine language into numbers so they can run on the computer. This is all that code all in one place. This would actually run in Python and generate all that stuff. But here's something that I would like to point out. So we took this expression, not A or B, and we just went through these steps, and it spit out a four-statement program, which is right there in the middle, that actually causes this expression to be evaluated and the answer to be put in the accumulator. That's really cool, but notice that each statement takes some fixed amount of time to execute. It's the cycle time of the computer. So, you know, a desktop computer these days can maybe do a billion of these in a second, which is a lot, but, you know, if you've got something that takes, you know, that's 4 billion statements or something that's 2 billion statements, you want the shorter one because that's going to run faster. So, by hand, I was able to generate the same expression with just two statements. Negate A, put in the accumulator, or that with B, put in the accumulator, and we're done. And so, in fact, in the clicker questions, you notice that there was a couple different things. They all had the same end result. They all computed the same thing, but they required different numbers of statements to do it. The idea of taking a program and shrinking down the number of statements necessary to make it run is called optimization. So some people will run optimized versions of a program, which means basically, however the program was converted to run in machine language, that machine language has been tweaked and fixed and twiddled so that it's as small and tight and fast as possible. And sometimes it's really helpful for taking a program that was automatically generated by a compiler and making it run fast enough to be helpful and useful. So that's what an optimizer does. We won't talk about how you'd actually do that, but there's a couple different kinds of optimizations in terms of trying not to compute the same thing multiple times, like finding something that's being computed twice and saying, oh, we'll just compute it once and store that answer and reuse it later. And then there's the notion of using logical equivalence to make something that's shorter. So the next example, I'm not going to step through this because I don't think you'll get that much out of it. But basically, I've got this expression E. I automatically, this logical expression E is a function of A and B and C and D. I automatically generated machine language code that evaluates that expression. And then, little by little, I showed how you can actually tweak it and make it faster, make it take fewer statements to execute the same thing. All right. Okay, so I think I can now recap that this chunk of the lecture the following way. So, from the beginning of the semester till now, we've looked at a whole bunch of different levels. A lot of times it's all with ands and ors and nots, but we're looking at them in more and more abstract and sophisticated ways as we go. So, but starting at the bottom is the notion that really a computer is made up of these physical bits, which are just electricity values, high or low. But they could be represented in other ways. In the book, I can't use up my voice, I have to sing tonight. One second. All right, so Hillis explains in the book that you can also represent binary values using water pressure. He showed how to use valves that could actually compute ands and ors and nots. It could also be with kinetic energy, the movements of things, like in my domino gates that I showed, or that Chris showed, I think. and the marbles. Bits are still there, and they're still doing the things that bits do, but they're represented physically in a very different way. But once you've decided on your bits and how to do them, the next level up is the basic logic gates, your and your or and your not. Okay? So as long as you can build those out of whatever your bits are, we can then go up another level and say, all right, well, once we've got and or not, we can start combining them to build up higher level things like equal gates, if-then-else gates, adding binary number gates,
right?
More and more sophisticated, high-level sort of concepts. Well, once you have enough of those, you can actually put them all together and make a circuit that is an entire machine language, that you can actually give it different values for input, and it can behave very differently. The level above that, you can take a high-level language like Scratch or Python and convert it into a machine language so it can run all the way down onto the computer. But that way, a person can interact with it in a very high-level way. As long as you know how to program in Python or C or Java or Logo or Scratch, the rest of the levels all take care of themselves. And then what happens above that? Now we've got this entire chain built up from bits all the way up to high-level languages. It doesn't end there. We can go up even higher and say, well, in that high-level language like Python, we might want to make software libraries. So software library might say, hey, you like to write video games, apparently, but not Constitution games. What are the sort of things that video game programmers need? They need stuff for rendering a character, like the player in the game, from different angles. So we're just going to write software routines that know how to do that, and then you, the video game programmer, can just call those. They're really written in Python or C or Java or whatever, but you don't have to worry about that. They've already been done for you. You're just going to, whatever you write is going to reduce to those, which is going to reduce to a machine language, which is going to reduce to logic gates, and ors and nots, and physical voltages. But you don't spend your days thinking about the voltages. You spend your days thinking about things in the game, bouncing off of walls and shooting things and scoring and helping other characters or whatever it happens to be in your game. That's all happening at a very, very, very high level. And in fact, if you've ever, some of these video games actually let you, as a player in the game, build up things, change the map, change the capabilities of a character. That's happening above the software library level. And it can just keep going like that, right? You just build things on top of things on top of things. This is why reduction, which is kind of the core idea in computer science, is so powerful. Because once it's all automated beneath you, you can just focus your mind on these higher level issues, and all the rest takes care of itself. So that's where we're going. And what I'd like to do is talk a little bit about software libraries, at least in an abstract sense, by talking a little bit about subroutines or procedures or functions, this idea that you can write in a high-level language a chunk of code that you can ignore the insides of and just use it whenever you need whatever that function provides. Now, we probably can't talk about, well, what are the right sort of functions that we need if we're building a graphics library for rendering 3D shapes? Because we don't have the background for that. Actually, you may. I do not have the background for that. But here's what I'd like to do, because I think this is a kind of subroutine that you all have exposure to and can understand and appreciate, and that is we're going to talk about songs. So songs, which I believe you're familiar with, and lyrics more generally, will sometimes have substructure in them that is nicely captured by this idea of a subroutine. Of course, they don't call them subroutines in songs, right? What do they call them in songs? Choruses, right. So here's an example of a song. This song doesn't have any choruses. So if you wanted to write the lyrics of this song, people familiar with, you know this song?
Mm-hmm.
Should we sing it? No, we won't sing it right now. I can
sing it right down my head. So.
Yeah, it's hard not to hear it. Once, you know, once the wheel is turning like that and they crash on the desert island, it pretty much does. Professor, right? Because that would be, a character that I can relate to. If you wanted to write a program that output the lyrics of the Gilligan's Island tune, it would look a lot like the lyrics to the Gilligan's Island tune. It would say something like, well, first sing, just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip, and then you'd have to have it sing each of the lines one after the other. There's nothing interesting there, but at least it's I'm trying to introduce to you this notion of programs that sing songs. All right, so This is a boring one, but we can get to a more interesting one. This is not boring because it's a bad song. It's actually a lovely song. But it's boring from a procedural standpoint because it's just a list of words. So in fact, if you wanted to do this in Scratch, and I have a little Scratch program that you can click on and do this, what it would look like is first sing the first line for 6 seconds, then sing the second line for 4 seconds, then sing the third line for 11 seconds, and so on. Not an interesting program. All right, but here's a more interesting program from a subroutine perspective. It turns out that from a lyrics perspective, the song is horrifying. And I didn't realize that until I went and typed them all into the lecture notes. Let's see. All right, so if you don't know this song, so Clementine. It's playing a little too slowly, but in a cavern, in a canyon, excavating for a mine, dwelt a miner, 49er, and his daughter, Clementine. That's a verse. And then it goes, oh my darling, oh my darling, oh my darling Clementine, thou art lost and gone forever, dreadful sorry, Clementine. And we're going to come back to that over and over again. That chorus gets repeated actually after every verse. It gets irritating after a while. But if you haven't sung this song all the way through to the end, you have to see the last verse. So she trips and she drowns, and there's nothing the guy can do because he can't swim. And so, how I missed her, how I missed her, how I missed my Clementine, but I kissed her little sister and forgot my Clementine. Like, that's the punchline? After all this, you're pining away, and you're like, oh, well, whatever, she's just another girl. So it's a pretty horrible song. But, from a subroutine structure standpoint, what you want to notice is, all right, here's the sort of straight Scratch code for singing the Clementine song, line after line after line after line. But the thing to notice is we repeat the chorus over and over again. So I shaded them there so you can see it. So instead of having those same two lines repeated over and over again, what we're going to do is we're going to make a subroutine. So here's a subroutine off to the right. This is in Scratch. The way that you do this in Scratch is you make a little block that says, when I receive chorus, in other words, when somebody in one of the scripts requests the chorus, sing the chorus. Now the song looks like this. Sing the first verse, first line, second line, then broadcast, hey, will someone please sing the chorus? So then the chorus gets sung, that happens over here, and then control goes back to the main script. In fact, if you look at the broadcast line, it says broadcast chorus and wait. And so what that means is what the main script does is it sings the first line, it sings the second line, and it says, will someone please sing the chorus? And then it waits. The chorus does its thing, and when it's done, it says, I'm done. And at this point, this program says, oh good, and it continues from where it left off. So it's helpful to think about this as actually being kind of two threads of control, two, you know, homunculi, two people, right? One is doing the main program, and the other one is sitting here waiting for the chorus to happen. And just sit, you know, it's all day, it's just sitting around, and if somebody says, I need a chorus. Someone said they needed a chorus, I can help you with that. And it sings the chorus, then it says, and now I'm done. And it steps back, and then control flow can continue in the other thread. All right? So is that pretty clear how these, at least in a vanilla sense, how these subroutines work? We're going to keep elaborating on this idea. So if you're starting to slip, this would be a good time to get back synced up. All right? We're good? Okay. All right. So turns out, I like the Beatles. They're kind of cool. The more that I look at Beatles songs, the more I think they were like closet mathematicians or something. They're just, or maybe they were just geniuses, because everything they wrote was just so interesting, and it all fits together so well, and the music is just, and it's fun to hear. They were just, that was a good band right there. So a lot of the songs that I ended up finding, for example, ended up being Beatles songs. So this is a song called All My Lovin'. Oh, wait, we may even have it. I don't think that's the Beatles singing it, though. It's not me. I think it's just a cover. Alright, so... Sorry about that. Alright, so take a look at the song. Remember it as best you can. And now ask yourself, where would you put the subroutines? If you were trying to, you know, compress the song a little bit and break it up into and capture the repeated chunks, where would you put the subroutines? So, I don't know, I'm up for suggestions. Let's see. the thing that feels, the thing that feels like a chorus is when they go, "All my loving, I will sing," or no, "send to you," and they do that. They come back to that piece a couple times. So, is that sort of what people were thinking? Is that what you're thinking?
Around the first already home interpretation.
After the first, which one?
I'll send.
Oh, and that gets repeated, right? And I'll send all my love to you, and there it is a third time. Right, that happens a couple, happens a couple times. All right, so, but in fact, that whole block gets repeated. The close your eyes actually gets repeated. The thing that you think maybe was a verse, maybe is sort of more like a chorus, because it's happening multiple times. So there's that piece, which we can capture with the same kind of subroutine structure that we just had for Clementine, right? Which says, all right, we'll take the close your eyes and I'll kiss you. So that piece comes out as the chorus. Then the main song, we call that chorus twice. You see, right in the beginning, then we do a couple other lines, then we call the chorus again, a couple more lines, and we're done. All right? But, in fact, there's more going on here. And while on the way, I'll write home every day and I'll send all my love to you, shows up there and in the chorus. What can we do with that? Well, we can actually make a subroutine inside the other subroutine. So here's how that goes. This is a very general idea, but specifically, here's how it plays out in this specific case. So, and then while I'm away, I'll write home every day and I'll send all my love to you, is in this subroutine right there. And if you look at the main program, it calls that subroutine, the third line says, and then, but in the chorus, the other chorus as well, the close your eyes part, it calls it too. So how does this work now? So you can sort of imagine that there's three people helping out with this program. One is on the main thread, the top one, when Beatles click, do the following. One is kind of standing guard on the close my eyes part, and one is standing guard on the and then while I'm away part. So the top guy starts. The first thing he does is he says, somebody please help me out. I need the close your eyes part sung. I'll wait until you're done. So it says, okay, go for it. And this guy wakes up and says, oh, I guess that's me. So the middle guy is now, he sings the close your eyes and I'll kiss you and tomorrow I'll miss you. The other line, remember I'll always be true. And then it says, oh, I still have a little bit more to go, but there's someone who can help me with that. So then he calls out, hey, can you fill in the and then while I'm away part? Go for that. And then he waits. The third guy wakes up and says, sure, I can help with that, and sings those three lines, and then says, I'm done. That I'm done message goes back to the middle guy, who says, oh, thanks so much. Now that you've finished that, it means my job is done too. I'm done. The top guy is informed, and then the top guy can continue going through. All right? So we've got nesting happening here, right? The subroutine is calling another subroutine, and it can sort of be interrupted in the middle to call another subroutine, and then when that one's done, then this one can finish, then the top one can go, and it can call it again, and call it directly to the bottom and pop back up. So the control flow is popping up all over, all around. And each of these subroutines has to remember who called it, right? Who wanted me? Because it's still waiting for it to be finished. It has to be informed when the thing it called is done. It has to be informed so it knows when it's done. So that and wait part is actually really, really important. Okay. Otherwise, you could just have chaos, right? They're all singing their verses at the same time. There's no love and I'm missing. Is it away? It would be horrible. All right. So so subroutines can call other subroutines. That's okay. Here's a song with even more structure. Again, Beatles. So if you break this song up, what you discover is that in fact, and yeah, only the Beatles. So I don't know what to call the routine, so I just call them by colors. Blue, red, yellow. The song goes blue, red, yellow, red, green, blue, red, green, yellow, red, and then 8 days a week, 8 days a week. Alright, now we slide the green for the first time. thing to do.
Oh,
hold on. You're going to write the note for McDonald's. So I guess I don't have the scratch program for this up here, but what it would look like is we would define the blue subroutine, the red, the yellow, and the green. Then the main program would call blue, red, yellow, red, green, blue, red, green, yellow, red, and then the main routine would have to sing the last line by itself, 8 days a week, 8 days a week, and that would be the song. And so the way the control flow is going to go is the lower level subroutines don't really know where they are in the song. They don't really care. The top level is responsible for getting the right ordering, but each of the subroutines is responsible for its job, which is singing the appropriate set of lines. Okay? So again, the responsibility is sort of diffused out, but it all comes together as long as everyone does their job. All right. So here's this is a particularly interesting kind of song. So we have audio on this. It sounds like it's in a rainstorm. I'm not sure why. There's thunder in the background. All right. So here's the interesting thing about Old MacDonald. We're going to come back to this kind of song actually quite often when we get into algorithms and growth rates. But what's cool about this song is if look at the three, one, two, three, there's four verses here. But look at them. The first one, how many lines is that? One, two, three, four, five, six. The second one is one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. The third one is longer still, and the fourth one, look how that's very long. Okay? Old MacDonald has this weird structure that the verses actually grow as the song goes on. And in fact, you can generalize this Old MacDonald song with however many animals you want. Each verse, at least this version, this kind of version of Old MacDonald, in each verse you sing through all the animals that showed up in the previous verses. So the first verse just sings about a cow. The second verse sings about a pig, and then it sings about the cow. The third verse sings about a horse, then it sings about the pig, and then it sings about the cow. And then the last one, chicken, horse, pig, cow. Right? And if we add more animals, each verse is going to have to repeat all the animals that came before. The verses are getting longer and longer and longer. This is a kind of subroutine structure that's not quite as obvious that how it fits into that same kind of beetle structure where there's these chunks and they just get repeated, because the chunks themselves seem to be growing or shrinking depending on where they show up in the song. But the structure is not so horrible, because notice every time the song snorts, it always follows it with a moo. Every time it neighs, it always follows it by a snort, which, by the way, has to be followed by a moo. See the first rule. Each time it clucks, it has to follow with a neigh, which has to be followed by a snort, which has to be followed by a moo. So all we have to do is put all the one earlier noise into each subroutine. So all right. So here's what we're going to do. I made a scratch program that actually sings the Old MacDonald song, so we can actually see this animated. I mentioned this in a talk in Boston recently, and a guy came up to me afterwards and said, "Did you use my version of the Old MacDonald song?" I am here from Norway. I don't think so. Because I invented that. I don't think you invented this one. This is just me singing.
Oh.
All right, so... So let me, what can I show you here? Let me do the song. Hopefully it doesn't take too long. This is the average dose, I'm sorry. The cow is kind of funny. My kids were asleep when I did this, so I sang a quiet voice. Now we start the second verse. What happens in the second verse with the pig?
And on that farm he had a pig.
So the pig is highlighted while it's doing its thing, but notice it's still on. It lets the cow do its thing. Watch how they switch off. When the cow is done, then the pig is done. Now the next verse starts. So their subroutine's getting called, and when they're finished, they're returning control back to the one who gave it to it.
Nay, nay here, and a nay, nay there, here, nay there.
It could be Winnie. I went with nay.
One point here, and an oink, oink there. Here, an oink, there, an oink, everywhere, an oink, oink. Here, and here.
Right? Right? They're just calling the next thing in line. And when, this, and when the verse ends,
E-I-E-I-O.
Cow is done, pig is done, horse is done. Next verse. Don't worry, there's only one more verse.
And on that farm he had a chick. E-I-E-I-O. With a cluck cluck here and a cluck cluck there.
Chicks don't cluck, right? That's a chicken. What should I say? Chick chick? What is it? Tweet tweet. Chirp chirp. All right. Okay. Pig knows that its job is to oink and then let the cow do its thing. Last bit of the song. That's just the cow that's doing that part, by the way. Now the cow is done, the pig is done, the horse is done, the chick is done, the song's over. All right. All right. So let's look to see what the scratch code actually does here. Because this is where the interesting serpentine stuff happens. So there's a serpentine called the cow. When I receive cow, this one wakes up. And what does it do? It says, old MacDonald had a farm, and on that farm he had a cow, E-I-O, with a moo-moo here and a moo-moo there, here a moo, there a moo, everywhere. Right. So with and then it calls a subroutine that does the mooing. Here's the mooing subroutine. It lights up the cow. Then it sings moo-moo here, moo-moo there. It waits, and then it turns the cow off. So that was really simple. It just does its thing. But let's look at what happens with the pig. The pig, again, sings when it's the pig's first turn. It does all that, and then it says, okay, now we go up to the oinking. How does oinking work? It highlights the pig. It oinks. Then, before it's done, it says, you know what? Cow, I need you to do your bit here. So it calls the cow subroutine and waits. When the cow is done, it waits for half a second more, and then it turns itself off, and that's the end of the pig. The horse is similar. It sings the horse first, but for neighing, it lights up the horse. It sings nay nay here and nay nay there. It then says, okay, I need you to do your thing, pig. Notice the pig's thing has in it the cow's thing. So by doing this, the pig will go, the cow will go, the cow will be done, the pig will be done, it comes back to the horse, waits half a second more, it turns off the horse, and that's the end of the horse. So it's all happening through these subroutine structures. The chicken or the chick clucks, brightness goes on, it does its clucking, and then it tells the horse to do everything that the horse has to do, which includes in it the pig and the cow, and when those are done, it comes back, switches off. So that's the whole song right there. All the subroutines do all the work of making it repeat and get longer and longer and longer. All right, we're within a few minutes of the end. Let me see. I think I can finish this lecture, so if we just, let me push on. I'll try to go quickly. There's the pig, there's the horse, there's the chick. Another Beatles song, you know, the Magical Mystery Tour. So this one goes, there's three verses, they're all exactly the same, except it's actually sort of haunting, it's sort of creepy. The first one says, the Magical Mystery Tour is waiting to take you away. The second one says, it's hoping to take you away. And the third one says, it's coming to take you away. And then finally, it's dying to take you away. And that's just, but the thing to notice is the verses are all the same except for that one little bit. So, we can actually make a verse that instead of singing the verse straight out, it actually sings the verse, and when it gets to that word, it substitutes in whatever the variable word says. Okay, so we can actually give it a parameter, and then once it's the whole song, the first thing we do is we set the word to be sung to be waiting, then we sing the verse, it substitutes that in, does the second one with hoping, does the verse, sets the word to coming, does the verse, and then sings the ending. So these parameters make the subroutines much more powerful and more general, because they can do the same thing with just a little bit of extra stuff. I can get through this. It's only 32 after. All right, this is a recursive song that now, as part of the verse, tells itself to sing a verse. All right? So, and I did this by with a Yuengling beer bottle, and the song is 99 Bottles of Beer on the Wall, which I think should be familiar to some people. But where is that song? here. Alright. I won't get to demonstrate the song for you, but the structure of it looks like this. When it's told to sing the beer bottle song, the beer song, it checks a parameter. The parameter is how many beer bottles are on the wall right now. If that number is greater than zero, it has stuff to do. If that number is zero or less, then there's nothing to do, it just stops. So if it's greater than zero, what does it do? It says blank, or however many bottles of beer on the wall, however many bottles of beer, if one of those bottles should happen to fall, decrement bottle by required hierarchy, add -1 to the number of bottles, so there's one fewer bottles, and then it says that many bottles of beer on the wall, and then it goes back to the top with now the value of bottles is one less than it was before. So it says broadcast sing beer song. So this beer song is sitting there waiting to be activated. When it's activated, it sings through, and at the end of it, it says, oh, I need to call the beer song. Hey, somebody sing the beer song. And like a clone of it appears next to it and says, sure, I'll sing the beer song. And it goes all the way through, and when it's done, it ends and returns control back to the first copy of itself. So this is what recursion is about. It's about basically subroutines that can call themselves but with different parameters so they can act differently. And what this will give us is it'll actually sing all 99 bottles of beer one after the other. It's a somewhat tedious song. So this notion of recursion is scary to a lot of people, but it's actually all around us. This is a little picture of broccoli. If you look at broccoli, it looks like broccoli, but if you break off one of the leaves, it looks like a smaller broccoli, which of course have leaves that if you break it off, is an even smaller broccoli, and it just keeps getting smaller. So you can you sort of see it there? There's little broccolis nested inside the other broccolis, just like the nesting dolls, the Russian nesting dolls. Open, what's inside? Another Russian nesting doll. Oh, well, that must have something inside. Another Russian nesting doll. And it does eventually terminate in both cases. This is what happens when recursion goes wrong. So this song, it sings the song, and at the end it says, oh, would you please sing the song? Which causes another copy of that subroutine to appear, which it sings. But that one doesn't end. When it's done, it says, hey, I need somebody to sing the rest of the song. So it makes another copy. And as long as you're willing to wait, more and more subroutines like this, it goes on. And so this is, when programs look like this, they're usually a bug, right? You want to kill it. Yeah. All right, so last thing I want to tell you, here's a little song about recursion and subroutines that I did. This will be the end of the class today.
I'm a pink kid in a pink program.
This is how pink programs actually work, by the way.
With the shade of your choice, I got bad code. Sometimes I miss spots, it's a sad code, and it's breaking my heart.
So the program didn't work properly. It didn't fill the heart correctly because it stopped before it should have.
Been a good girl, crazy about Python. Check me out and she cleaned up my code.
So this is a different version of the filling. So it actually worked. It filled the whole heart with color.
I saw how she did it.
And that's the program that actually runs in Python. Just 6 times.
I talked to myself.
Does these little recursive fill?
process is complete. So my hacker, she came to my rescue.
And I answered,
much more robust. Got a stack now. It's likely to do this. And I check it. It's even in your family tree. As long as there's a termination condition, the circularity isn't a problem.
All right, thanks. See you Wednesday. All right, yeah. No, this was Wednesday. See you Wednesday. Yes, sir.
How do you know about bread?
So the interesting thing is I did not. I put up that example, and the TA last year said, how did you know about Brad? And so at that point, I went and found out about it. I only knew it from a laptop play-along, but then I found the Brad version.
Brad version plus good.
It's very good. Well, thank you very much. It's very